Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, let's gather around that time again when we have the book feature. And today we have none other than Karabo Kholeng, who's a journalist as a public speaker as well. Absolutely renowned in book circles and someone who does this extremely, extremely well. Karabo, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us this evening. Good evening.
Thank you, Kumelo, and good evening to your listeners. Hi.
You know, we always start with a little bit of an introduction to the person who's giving us a review. And everybody, I think, in book circles would say, oh no, everybody knows Karabo. Everybody knows your relationship with books. Where did your love for reading start, Karabo? Can you remember?
It started from childhood, really. Mm-hmm. My parents bought us those little Red Riding Hoods from like the age of 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And I remember there was this, and they'd read to us. And then you just kind of pick it up with creche.
Yeah.
And then there was this book club called the Young People's Book Club, if I remember it correctly.
Mm.
And my mom signed us up for it. So I think it was just because we were such a nuisance and there wasn't TV and those kids weren't allowed to play with other kids.
Yeah.
So I guess the books were a distraction, but it was also a way to sort of, you know, get away with your imagination. And then we moved around a lot as I was growing up and coming of age.
Mm.
So I found that, you know, with having to change schools and friends and stuff like that, and going to schools with friends whose parents also moved around.
Mm.
So these are sort of like expatriate schools.
Mm.
It just ended up that books were the one constant factor in my life.
Mm.
With people coming in and out of my life and times keeping on being changing, because I've always been a very sensitive person.
Mm.
I just found that, you know, the books were the one constant, and of course you could carry them with you and go to other worlds within them. Mm. So
many people would say, yeah, that sounds about familiar, but not everybody hangs on to books in the same way. So others in adulthood just kind of ditch it and they carry on with life. You still maintain a really healthy relationship with books. How do you fit it in, and do you know why?
Well, I'm no longer so sure if it's a healthy relationship because I've been doing it as a job for so many years.
Yes.
So the irony is that the pile of books I want to read grows exponentially faster than the books I have to read for work.
Yes.
Because what people don't understand with our industry is that, like with everything else, you know, the new books come out, you commission them. If you're lucky and you become renowned, or you've got a really nice sort of producer, you know, in the radio station, maybe you can tuck in one of your favorite books of the last 10 years into a corner over the holidays and nobody's listening.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
So I think that's the irony of it. But I do also receive really special books as gifts that I know I'll have time to savor when I have time to savor.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, it is kind of bittersweet. I do feel like I can't wait to sort of, and you don't really retire from this kind of work,
mm-hmm.
but I like to sort of get those, you know, those few weeks where I'm not reading for deadline.
For work, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I totally get that. Are you still a book, as in book between covers kind of person, or have you moved on to devices?
I really tried the devices, but I think what happened was still like the first generation of devices.
Yeah.
Maybe in the past 10 or 12 years since the first time they were handing them out to us like candy, saying, try these. I was like, nah, this doesn't work for me. I think the devices are good in the sense that you can store lots of books in one place. So for someone like me, that would really help. But I still view books as physical friends, as physical objects of art, you know, cracking that, open that spine for the first time.
Mm.
I still mark my pages with bookmarks.
Yes.
Bookmarks invite you to a world of other books. And it's random, right?
Yeah.
Bookmarks are not algorithms that try and think for you.
Yeah.
You just pick up a couple at the bookstore. And I think that's also a nice way to explore other kinds of books that you don't necessarily have to for work or because an algorithm tells you to. So yeah, it's a yes, no.
Are you sort of a kind of person who has, you lean more towards one particular genre over others?
No.
Okay, that's good.
I think that if there's any subject of human interest, a fantastic book has been written about it.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I try and, you know, have that kind of outlook, because also then I'll use books to teach me about other subjects and to enter other worlds and have other worldviews that my current kind of social and physical circumstances don't just allow.
Mm.
You know, as a Black South African woman, I don't have the passport privilege to travel to, I don't know, some far-flung places in Greenland, for example, with the ease that which, you know, the imagination can allow.
Mm. And so we're going to speak about your selection now. But, you know, you mentioned books that are your, you know, top 10 maybe over the past 10 years. Do you remember the book that stays, as you said, over the past 10 years? Because what I sometimes find is that for now, I think this is now my favorite. 2 years from now, maybe not anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, the thing is also books, if you read them again, sometimes you may derive even more further enjoyment from them, and then other times you don't. And I suppose that's why I call them books of each generation, right?
Mm.
So I'm still suspect there's a reason why certain Shakespeare works are taught at a certain school grade level, because also a certain time of a person's life, developmentally, you know, in terms of physically and their view of the world, trying to strike out outside their parents, trying to find common ground with their peers, and also their bodies are developing. So you have like these classic books like The Crucible, like a lot of Shakespearean work, a lot of Stephen King's work is also kind of targeted at that audience, and Anne Rice as well, who wrote the Interview with the Vampire. And also a lot of young adult books also have a lot of fantasy infused in them. I think that as you get older and life gets realer, the magic is robbed for you. So I still struggle to find a lot of adults who read that kind of fantasy, kind of magical realism stuff, but it's more and more young people. But then I realize that, you know, sometimes I think there's parts about your brain and how you're developing as a person that makes you more open to certain worlds than others.
Mm. Do you give yourself permission to leave a book if it's not working, or do you just push through?
I leave it now. You know, life is too short.
I like it.
Yeah, I leave it now. Yeah. Look, I mean, there's some books that, again, it's because of work. But then there's some books where it's just bad writing.
Yes.
Then, you know, you'd have that chat with my editor, and my editor, thankfully, is somebody who's trained in this field and understands that you need to respect your reading audience. And you also need to see, is it as you allowing the author to just go back and realize that, should I really be exposing humanity to this kind of work?
Oh, you're killing me. Because it's very hard, especially in your work, where you have to review a book that, boy, is just so bad, so badly written, but you've got to review it and you've got to find a way to be diplomatic about what it is that it's trying to achieve, or not at all. And I find that quite funny, actually, sometimes.
Yeah.
Look, let's look at you know, your list, which is actually quite varied, actually, I must say.
Yeah.
I like that about your list. And let's start with Zuki says, obviously quite renowned, and she's just relentless. She publishes and writes all kinds of books, not just fiction, you know, nonfiction as well, children's books. Also, I mean, she's just amazing. Zuki Sevanar. And this particular one that you've chosen is Love, Marry, Kill.
Mm. So, Zukisa's books also have a very dark quality to their humor.
Yes, I
agree. And I think she does a brilliant job of dealing with, you know, particularly through her works of fiction, but she does that with her nonfiction work as well. She deals with topics that are very heavy in our society, but she handles it with such a light hand and with such dark humor at the same time that reading them is also almost kind of a cathartic way of processing our own individual and social traumas. And also working with the fact that South Africans are hilarious. We're among the funniest people in the world.
And also
for a woman to pull that off, right?
Yeah.
Because the common kind of thought in public life is that Black women are not that funny. They're angry all the time. So she completely just kind of subverts that and says that, no, we're a hilarious bunch and we use humor both to cope and also to overcome, you know.
It's very modern. This is a very modern piece of writing. South Africans will just see themselves through this. It's set very much here in Johannesburg. And to your point, you know, it's got some amazing humor, some really interesting... Well, I call it a love story. Yeah, I would. But lovely humor, just typically South African kind of humor.
It is. And it's not just also limited to South Africa. It also, you know, doffs a hat at the long-term kind of transnational relationships we've had across the SADC region that were only made very clear by kind of apartheid borders. So you've got families that for generations have known each other, you know, across the different borders, but the drama takes place in Joburg mostly. And it's, you know, it's your typical, I don't know what to call it, but you know, so this young couple, they grow old together as a couple, not old but older, but then they both sort of meet someone else, then a former love, and then the one couple, they don't come together, but they think that they so their couples. So you have these two couples, right? So it's okay, so it's Pimila and Karabo. And Pimila's married to ex, Karabo's married to wife. And they're starting to have trouble in their individual marriages. And they're convinced that partners, then Karabo becomes friends with the husband of this girl and vice versa. And they start to think that their spouse, they're having an affair. And then obviously they bring in Nkabi to just show how violent we are. And there's a little bit of magic and a little bit of, you know, reading the world through the lens of tradition and reading the world through the lens of modernity, raising kids, paternity. So all the things that kind of made South Africa tick. There's a good help dose of sex, there's fashion, there's, you know, contemporary life. So it's lots of fun, but it does so with a great deal of intelligence. So this is a book for adults.
Yeah. And I mean, only in South Africa where you get to see that Ngabi gets to be cheaper.
Yes. The price comes down.
It's so much easier now to kill people, you know, and it's in demand. So, you know, we've got enough people who can do that work. Okay, I mean, it's a winner for me. It's a winner. She's a brilliant writer. So there's no question about that. Our next book is...
You can read it any time, guys. You know, I know Christmas has passed. Some of us also didn't read our Christmas books, but there's another holiday coming up soon. And you can also sneak it in. You know, sometimes it's good to sneak a book like this in during those kind of flat days where, you know you can get away with just ignoring everybody else in your life for a couple of days. Instead of doom scrolling, just read a book.
Yeah. You know? We were always here. And I love this one, Stories of Black Inventors. I love it across the diaspora. I love it because I think we really do not honor our scientists, our creators, our inventors enough. We just, black people were always on the back foot. And we don't even talk about some of the challenges, some of the things that they got to experience before they became these big names, that some of them failed at school and they were told they were never going to make it. So it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also stories about, you know, more than anything. So the first thing, you know, we've got this dearth of students who are not able to get into the STEM fields. But here's an example of storytelling where you may not be able to get into STEM per se, but you can become a science communicator. You know, I mean, it's one of the things that I sharpened my skills with when I went back to school. I got a certificate in science writing so that now I'm able to come, you know, to get everybody excited about science, because that's where you may find your future, you know, your future inventor. And yes, the stories do go across different generations and across the diaspora, going back like 400 or 500 years, you know, really from the young slave who invented basically a way to propagate the vanilla pod such that it could be industrially grown. Before, it was rare for a vanilla pod to come to, you know, for a vanilla tree, for a vanilla plant to come to fruition and produce sufficient pods that would survive the next generation. That's just one. The guy who makes the reinforceable shoes such that shoes could be mass produced. So a lot of these are inventors who use nature and their powers of observation to realize that here's a solution to something. And that's basically what an inventor is. You may not come up with the original toy, but you find a way to make it accessible to everyone, thereby democratizing people's access to a more dignified life, you know.
And I mean, so, it's short, about five pages each story. So it's, you know, you don't have to stay with the book all the time. You can just pick a story, leave it, and come back at another time. So these are wonderful short stories of, and some you'll recognize, hey? I mean, some of them are quite recent inventions. You'll recognize those people, and their stories just make you feel like, oh, it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, it is, and it is targeted at people who are curious, you know, who are curious about this field and who are curious to be inventors, and that you can come from any background, really, you know, and a lot of these stories show that, you know, as an example, and that it can happen anytime. Mm-hmm. And, and the collection of writers as well also come from a diverse group of backgrounds, but they're all good writers. I mean, that's one thing that qualifies them. But they also lend their peculiar style of writing, and they work together to make sure that these short stories are accessible. You can dip in and out. You want a piece of history. You want a piece of something that made the news recently. You want to check on the progress of someone's work, whether somebody has added to that invention or not.
Anyone surprise you, Karabo?
For me, it was the vanilla part, because vanilla is one of my favorite things.
Okay. No. No, I totally get it. For me, it was the automatic lift doors.
You know,
it's because it's so common. And you think, oh, there was a time, by the way, when this was not so easy. This was not so... You know, it just didn't happen. And so I like that. I like the fact that, you know, this is... And I didn't know. I didn't know who had invented it. I'm going to take a quick break, if you don't mind. Karabo Kholeng is with me today to review some wonderful books. She's a journalist, a public speaker, and somebody who's just all around a great books person. She's a books person. And I would say a publisher's best friend, I would say. She's got a few books that she's recommending for us today. Some of these, you know, are not long reads, as we've just spoken about. We Were Always Here. It's a collection of short stories by primarily, you know, I'd call it scientists. These are professionals in their own right and have written these stories of inventors and how, you know, primarily black inventors, African inventors around the diaspora. And so get, you know, if you've got time, you can squeeze in like a five pager and stop it and come back at another time. I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue with our review. And what are you reading? I'm just curious. If you are listening to us and you have a book that you would like us to have a look at, that's, you know, give us a call. Tell us what you're reading and how's it going? 086-00-00-959. We continue our conversation. It's our book feature, and my guest is Karabo Kholeng, and we continue our review of some of her favorite books at the moment. Karabo, thanks for staying with us. Our next book is, let's see where we are now, Daddy Issues. Ooh, this is interesting. Daddy Issues by Unkabetsi Masobe. Lovely, lovely young lady. And I just think this was so refreshing.
Yes, I mean, this is a remarkable achievement. She's a chartered accountant and an astute researcher and storyteller. I mean, her power for, you know, telling a story and the topic as well. I mean, this topic is, unfortunately, it's perennial in South Africa. I mean, you see some of the really sad jokes. If somebody, like, there's this one TikTok that stays with me, lingers with me forever. This young woman... She must be, I mean, she's come home to visit her dad. So she's a young woman, ostensibly teens, early 20s. And she decides that she's going to, her dad is a clean shaven head. She decides that she's going to put glitter on his head and make it look like a topi that's got a bow on it. It's really cute. And the comments were in the tens of thousands, Pimelo, saying that, hey, it's nice to have a dad. I wish I could do that on mine's head, except he's not there. You know, and I was just like, oh, dear, you know, that wound resurfaces. But what she's done with Daddy Issues is that she got other women, young women's stories about how, and these are women who are accomplished, but they say there's this gaping hole in my life because my dad still doesn't see me. And she writes, these stories come together with compassion, with empathy. They're confidential, they're anonymous. And they don't just blame the dad, but they look at how we have a broken family dynamic where it even caused problems with the parent who was raising them. You know, so it's just a touching collection of stories. I think every household should have it, especially when there's an absent father, and particularly for mothers who are raising children with absent fathers. And I think that story is often told in she's angry or she's overworked and doesn't have time. Mm. But in terms of the heart that's broken, raising a child alone with somebody who's either can't be there or won't be there. I think it's a very important important piece of work.
And she also points to another type of
it's that time of the evening. Absent father, yeah. Present absent father, yeah.
What's the word, Karam? What's the word I want to use?
Absenteeism.
Yes.
That one.
It's after nine. English is gone. So
and which you saw someone else have been talking all day.
Absolutely. And she, for me, yes. I think she brings that to the fore in a very delicate way, because it's the father is here. He's in the house. He's with us, but so absent in his presence, and how young people reflect on that as well. I think really, really interesting, saying, you know, it's not this one kind of absent father that we're talking about here. We're speaking about other kinds too, where they are here, they sleep here every night, they, you know, we see them every day, but actually are not present at all.
They provide, but they don't nurture, right? Yeah. But I mean, these are some of the things that we're trying to undo in our society when you talk about how do you have a positive masculinity instead of a toxic one or a nurturing one at that. So a lot of guys who do provide, you know, do so with very little in terms of a guideline, you know, so that everyone's figuring it out as they go along. There's peer pressure where, unfortunately, that's why there's higher insurance. Men goad each other to do things in a way that asserts masculinity as only dominance. And you know, financial dominance, physical dominance, sexual dominance, other than a way of being human, you know, and a particular way of being human that can be good for society. I think we are so distracted by our violence, which is also a product of that. Mm-hmm. Where I don't know where we're going to find the time. And young people are saying, "Look, we are here, and this is how we've got to say it. This is how we see it as the children who've grown up in this, where we're told we're free, but we've got these issues." That our parents have, that our grandparents have.
Mm. She says she's writing another one, a second installation for young men to also, you know, have space and room to express themselves and how they feel about absent fathers.
Yes, and that is incredibly powerful. Mm. I mean, it's very difficult to get people to speak to that in very honest ways. So I think that's incredibly powerful because it'll give us insight into what's really going on, because a lot of young men did show up and said, you know, we'd like to say something.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
Okay. Gwa, Mai, Mai. Okay, no, that's not the title of the book. It's Mai, Mai and the History and Heritage of Gwa, Mai, Mai Market. So people will obviously recognize the Gwa, Mai, Mai Market. What an incredible story. And it's wonderful how he's weaved history into just a story, right? Where, you know, you follow a story of this individual, but obviously steeped in history, the actual history of Mai, Mai, which was, I had no idea that it was originally Mai, Mai, not Mai, Mai, as we call it.
Yes. Dr. Sipostol is a cultural anthropologist. I mean, if he also owned, I don't know if he still does, a record label that brought us remarkable artists as well. So in hip-hop and jazz. So he's got an eye for how our culture and how we act out our culture in creative ways is deeply steeped in our social history and our political history. And Gwa, Mai, Mai, I think its political and social history has often been overlooked. And this book, it's available for the public, but it is a very serious academic work.
Mm.
But if you consider yourself that you might want to be a scholar, whether you're a lay scholar or a traditional scholar of the history of this city, and particularly Gwa, Mai, Mai, and how it's steeped in kind of migrant heritages and pursuing and defending that heritage from religious heritage to kind of ethnic heritage. It's part of the struggle for independence and what's going on there now. I mean, Dr. Sithole has started a group of varsity students who were born and raised Gwamaimai, and they want to make a positive contribution. One's got an internet cafe, which is also a hair salon that's going as a business there while he completes his studies. So it is a truly remarkable book. It's something that you need to take your time to read, and you know, you ought to have it in your library if you're serious about heritage and culture and society in South Africa, and particularly in Johannesburg.
And just to make the point, this is about a compound that was set up for miners. And originally, it was not the one that we know under the bridge. It was somewhere else.
That is true. And, you know, it had a beer hall as well. So it was basically hostel and bazaar. It was basically to create a little kind of bunker suburb, if we were a bunker township or a bunker slum for miners who'd come to Johannesburg so that they'd have something to do with their time when they're not underground. And obviously the money that they spend would go back to the mining bosses.
And the Mai, the name itself and the title, I didn't know this, comes from the fact that, you know, the person who used to be, I suppose, the caretaker or the person who was, the caretaker of the compound. Every time one of them would die underground, they would have to bring him up and you would hear the mae, mae as a calling, as a cry, alerting everybody else that, you know, one of us has died. And the name stayed.
Yes, he was a mine manager at the Salisbury and Jubilee Gold Mining Companies. I think his name is Mr. Saul Msane.
Yes.
Came from KZN. So it was a signature exclamation, Maye, Maye, when somebody passed away that, you know, made that the name. I mean, it's also reflective of how the story of how lives are, and, you know, and fortunes are destroyed when people come to the city, particularly in context of the history of the mining industry to this day, with the Zamazamas and how they've brought certain communities to their knees, is indicative that ours is still a very painful story of movement, and where there's containment, there's death, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's absolutely quite a wonderful read there. Maye, as in M-A-E-N-A-Y-E, M-A-Y-E, and the history and heritage of the Gwamaimai market, how you would usually spell it as an M-A-I-M-A-I market. Karabo, thank you. This has been absolutely delightful. Thank you very much for your contribution.
Thank you so much, Pumelo, and keep on reading.
Thank you, Karabo Kholeng, there just helping us with her selection for the week. So let me go through them again today. It's Love, Marry, Kill by Zukiswa Varna. Another one is We Were Always Here, Stories of Black Inventors Across the African Diaspora by many writers, but you would, at the top of the list is Dr. Candice Bailey, Lerato Magate, and the list goes on. And then there is Daddy Issues by Onkabetsi Masobe, a young lady, young, really dynamic young lady, who, as Karabo was saying, is a CA, actually, and has written this. It's a collection of stories. So it's not just one story. It's a collection of stories. And really just young people talking about, but particularly women, talking about, you know, how they feel about their absent fathers, all kinds of absenteeism, that's it. And then the last one we've just discussed is Maye Maye, the history and heritage of the Gwamaimai market. That's by Dr. Sipostole. And he's a scholar, he's a writer. He's somebody who really writes a lot about culture, music, and this is, it is a little academic, but I'd say everybody will be able to follow, particularly if you know the Gwamaimai market. You'll be able to see right there beautiful, rich history of the market and how it got there and its origins, as we were saying, and how it wasn't always necessarily where it's located now. So that was the second location where it moved to. So that's a selection by Karabo Kholeng. That's it, folks. We are done. I'll be away for tomorrow and Thursday. I'll be back on Monday.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.